The king of pop in his prime. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Try to remember the Michael Jackson of 1982. Before the court cases, the financial collapse, the plastic surgery. In those days, it seemed he could do no wrong. 25 years ago this week, Thriller was released, the top-selling album of all time. It stayed at number one for an unprecedented 37 weeks. It spawned 7 top 10 hits and won 8 Grammy Awards. But the numbers only tell a part of the story. Here to tell us the rest of the story are two guests. Jim Farber is the pop music critic of the New York Daily News. And Bruce Swedien is the multiple Grammy Award-winning engineer who recorded all of Michael Jackson's adult hit records, including Thriller. Gentlemen, welcome to both of you. Jim, let me start with you. This record, you know, top-selling album of all time, about 100 million sold around the world. So, commercial stature, sure. But why is Thriller still important from an artistic standpoint 25 years on?
I think there are a lot of reasons. I mean, you know, one of the broadest reasons is that you could look backward at a very different time in pop culture now. You know, now is a time in the age of the internet when pop culture is completely fractured. We're almost in danger of not having a real cohesive pop culture anymore. Whereas 25 years ago, you can look back at kind of a high point for uniform pop culture, where everybody was listening to the same person, everybody was talking about the same person, and at that time it was Michael Jackson.
You almost make it sound like it's a bad thing that we've lost that.
I think it's halfway bad. I think it's bad in terms of pop culture as having pop culture as a connecting point. You know, it's kind of a secular religion where we all kind of agree on something. We're all on the same page. We all have the same conversation. On the other hand, of course, that would breed a certain uniformity. And what we have now is a lot more diversity. So it's, you know, it's a give and take.
Okay. Bruce, you had previously worked with Michael Jackson on Off the Wall. Now, that was, you know, that was a successful record. It sold like 8 million copies or something here in the States. How was the strategy behind Thriller different?
Well, actually, I started working with Michael in New York. Even before that, we worked together. Quincy and I met Michael when we were doing the movie The Wiz.
Mm-hmm. Quincy Jones, the producer.
Yeah, Quincy Jones, right. And I don't know if you remember that movie, but Michael played the Scarecrow.
I don't remember the movie. I know it had been based on the play of the same
name.
Yeah,
The Wizard of Oz, and it was a right. Broadway hit, and Michael is a big part of the... We actually had a couple of top five records from that movie. But getting back to Thriller and this particular time, I'll just remember one little event that was so interesting to me at that time. And the music business, the recorded music business, was in a little bit of trouble. Video games and arcades were a big deal, and young people were going to the video arcades and staying away from the record stores. And so Quincy said, well, we're going to record Michael Jackson. A couple days later, we were walking into the Westlake, beautiful new Westlake studio in Hollywood, and Quincy first, then me, then Rod Temperton, and I think Michael's managers after that, and Michael was already there. Quincy turned to us and said, okay, guys, we're here to save the recorded music industry. scared the daylights out of me, I'll tell you.
Actually, you know, to look back at that time, we're about, you know, 1980, 81, the album came out in 82, major record companies were sloughing off all of their so-called, you know, non-mainstream artists. You know, that meant like jazz labels that had been around for years and part of the major labels were being cut back or, you know, cut loose entirely. So, yeah, I mean, in a funny way, it sort of echoed what, you know, what's happening today.
What's going on right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the idea was to make a record that would be the tide that raises all boats. That was the idea.
Yeah, absolutely. And Quincy is the guy that could do it. And we all knew that, of course. And we had this tremendous talent in Michael, and we'd already been exposed to that, so Quincy said, we're going to do the music that will save the recording industry. And that's exactly, I mean, you can't predict those things. You can't say, well, this is what it's going to do, but that's what happened.
So is that the reason for incorporating, you know, all the different genres, the kind of synth pop of the day, the, you know, the heavy metal, the Eddie Van Halen doing the guitar right. solo and all that kind of stuff?
Actually, no. This is Quincy's way of working. I can't say enough good things about Quincy Jones, and he just raises the bar every time we go into the studio. And musically, now, Quincy has a tremendous classical training, and the ethics of his music are just incredible. He studied composition and arranging with Nadia Boulanger in Paris, and was
the same person who taught Copland and Piazzolla and Philip
right.
Glass.
Quincy was her favorite for several years, and I think that had a big impact on the music quality that we imprinted on Thriller, because there's so many different styles there, but Quincy's the master of that. He just he wants to do it right.
A man with open ears. Let me come back to you, Jim Farber, from the Daily News. I mean, to get this sort of broad appeal that Quincy wanted and that Michael Jackson would turn out to do so well, what kind of compromises did he have to make in terms of being, you know, being seen as specifically an African-American performer and then, you know, trying to reach out to the broader audience?
Well, at that time, I think, at the time of Thriller, I don't think they really were compromises, you know. I mean, basically, you know, one man's compromise, another one's crossover, you know, or another one's interesting amalgam. For instance, I mean, obviously, in bringing in, say, Eddie Van Halen for Beat It, they were going to get a whole new audience. So that sounds very cynical. But it worked. You know, I mean, it sounded really was well integrated as music. It didn't seem like a self-conscious move, even though obviously there was a strategy behind it. You know, so using, you know, other guests, bringing in other genres. But I think that Michael Jackson's interest at that time, you know, really wasn't a lot of different kind of music. He certainly didn't want to be ghettoized.
As an R&B performer.
As an R&B performer. And also, I mean, if you think of his background in Motown, I mean, Motown had the same idea as well, that this is America's music. This is American pop music, you know, as opposed to, you know, a label like, say, Stax at the day that was making, you know, grittier music that was not, a lot of that did cross over, but it wasn't meant to cross over quite in the way that Motown was. So again, you know, Michael Jackson grew up with that. He certainly knew how to appeal to a lot of people, but I think that was his natural bent.
All right, so for reasons both for Michael's and from producer Quincy Jones's end, you had Toto, you had Paul McCartney, and you had Eddie Van Halen on Beat It. It was a great piece of pop music when it was released 25 years ago. Beat It, from the album Thriller by Michael Jackson, 25 years ago this week it was released. And we're looking back with Jim Farber, the pop music critic of the New York Daily News, and Bruce Swedien, who was the engineer of Thriller and so many of other Michael Jackson's hit records. Jim, you mentioned before it was a very different time. Is there any chance of an artist out there now in the current market with a Thriller up his or her sleeve? Could we ever see this kind of cultural you know, a single cultural piece of work, an icon like this, seeping that widely into the culture?
I don't really think that's possible. You know, and it's not because people aren't making great work now and won't make work as good or better. It's just because the way the music is delivered is so different and the audience is so fractured. You know, there just isn't that kind of uniform, you could say conformist pop culture anymore. You know, we're all in our own worlds. As I said before, the great thing about that is it means so much more music can be heard.
Right.
The bad thing about it is that it means that we don't have this conversation with each other, you know, that all the fans are kind of in their own little world.
Yeah, here's a note posted on the Soundcheck page of our website by Isaac from Brooklyn, who writes, "I celebrate the death of pop. The coming of age during Michael Mania was extremely oppressive.
Mm-hmm.
I envy the kids of today because there is so much diversity available."
Mm-hmm.
And listeners, you can tell us your memories of Thriller on the Soundcheck page of our website, WNYC.org. Did you own a single Michael Jackson glove? Did you learn to moonwalk? Or are your memories tainted by who Michael Jackson has become since? Now, Bruce, you said before that, you know, a lot of the responsibility for the way this record was made rested with Quincy Jones, the producer. Just how experimental was Michael Jackson when you were in the studio with him for this record?
Well, I would say that even to surpass the experimental part of it, and this was what makes me wonder if there will ever be another artist with that quality, and that is Michael as a musician and as a vocalist. I've recorded everybody almost and have never worked with anyone that can sing or do music like Michael. He's absolutely fantastic. It gives me chills now to think of the day we were in New York and we're rehearsing and we're going to do She's Out of My Life. Quincy and I have always tried to figure out, for instance, how could Michael even know an experience like that?
And young guy.
And I would invite anyone that wonders about this event to listen to that recording and just listen to Michael.
You mean the sense of having lived through something like this when, in fact,
right,
he hadn't?
Michael couldn't possibly have done that.
Yeah. So that was one of the ballads on the record.
Right.
What about a song like Billie Jean? I mean, the story is that you, ooh, Bruce, had to do something like Quincy wanted you to remix this song again and again, almost 100 times.
Yeah, 91 times. I have 91 mixes of Billie Jean, reels of tape to the ceiling.
Why? What was he looking for?
We were just looking for the translating the tremendous energy of that record. If you listen to the recording now, you can feel the energy and the I don't hear that in the modern music. And I would like to point out, though, that my mix number 2 was what went on the album.
So the other 88 that came after...
Yeah, didn't quite get there.
Jim, mix number 2, you know, features this amazing introduction. It's all anybody talked about for a while when it came out. Really long by the standards of the day. Was that a reflection of Michael Jackson's interest in dance? You know, was this sort of geared to the video to give him a chance to show off his moves?
It certainly worked that way. I mean, it's a great hook, as you say. I mean, it's something that that everybody remembers, you know, before the vocal comes in. The first sounds of the record are riveting and still really do something.
Can I mention one thing? Sorry
yeah.
to interrupt, but I was even at that point with Michael and Quincy experimenting with different types of reverb and different echo chambers on that. And if you notice, Michael's little vocal sounds in that do have a unique, very buoyant quality to them. And that was due to the fact that we were looking for something really unique.
And really kind of cinematic, so
right.
You know, sound effects.
Very much so.
Let's hear that famous intro to the song Billie Jean from the Michael Jackson album, now 25 years old, Thriller.
She was more like beautiful.
Billie Jean from Michael Jackson's album Thriller, the top-selling album of all time, according to the Guinness Book of World Records. Chris from Brooklyn wrote in to the Soundcheck page of our website to write that Thriller nearly defines the essence of 1980s music. Michael, of course, Toto is the rhythm section, Eddie Van Halen's guitar solo on Beat It, we've talked about this, Paul McCartney guesting, the tempos from breakdance to slow dance, all it's missing is a cameo from Alf. The album is a lover, not a fighter. However, Jim Farber from the New York Daily News, there are other people who beg to differ. The London Telegraph.
Mm-hmm.
He represented American cultural imperialism at its most alluring. You know, what do you think of that?
Well, that's the flip side of what I'm talking about before. You know, the idea of a uniform culture is also a fascist culture, if you want to look at it that way. I mean, I saw that piece in Telegraph. I thought, you know, he made some good points, but just sort of took them too far.
Mm-hmm.
You know, American culture is very popular around the world for a lot of reasons, and some of them are very good. You know, just that it appeals to people naturally. You know, they're interested in what is coming from America, what's coming from, you know, all the roots music here, certainly all the jazz music and blues music, and, you know, that is American music.
Well, how calculating do you think they were about the global marketing of this record?
Well, marketing is calculated, you know, I mean, by definition. So that's one part of it, of course. I mean, they did a brilliant sell job,
mm-hmm.
but at times the work sold itself. I mean, I can, you know, one memory I have was I was working for a rival record company back at the time, and when the Beat It clip was about to come out, you know, the head of the video department had a clip of it before it was going to be seen on MTV. And, you know, he brought everybody in and he showed it to us, and it was just, first of all, everybody asked for it to be shown over and over again. You know, and again, it's hard, you have to kind of remember that day. You know, now you look at it, and it's like you're used to that clip. But it hit with a tremendous force. You know, it wasn't like anything you'd seen before. That the sweep of the choreography, the sound of, you know, the real sound effects that were used, and even the way it opened with the garage door sound opening was like something you hadn't heard before.
Right, and I want to get back to Bruce Swedien about all of that. But let me ask you first, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we're talking about the music videos now.
Mm-hmm.
MTV at that time was not playing black artists.
Right.
I mean, Michael Jackson really busted down that door in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he had a major record company behind him.
They had to threaten, yeah. But, I mean, this is another point that I was sort of making in the piece that I was writing about it, is that, and again, I can tell you from being at another record company at that time, you know, most of the African-American artists at the time were ghettoized in black music departments, so-called black music departments. And it was very hard for them to get taken seriously as pop stars,
yeah.
You know, it's basically like Broadway-based pop stars, which is how many of them wanted to be seen, and certainly how Michael Jackson wanted to be seen. You know, Michael Jackson made that possible for more people, I think, you know, after that success. It kind of encouraged record companies, oh, maybe, you know, maybe we don't have to be so afraid of this. And then it changed so much in the 90s with this real mainstream ascent of R&B and hip-hop, and then it changed things dramatically from there. But if you ask any modern hip-hop stars or R&B stars, they all cite Michael Jackson as having been key to the kind of change that then, you know, came in the next decade.
All right. Now, we got a call in the control room a couple of minutes ago from a student of video production in Philadelphia calling to say that, you know, in video production, when you're sort of learning your craft, that they studied the Thriller film, the music video, extensively. It really is. It's a 14-minute film.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce, what techniques were you guys using to make the music so cinematic, so dramatic, so lush?
Well, I remember in the beginning of the Thriller production of the title piece that John Landis said to me, he said, you're going to have to take the song apart and put it back together again, because he, as the director, and Michael as the artist, wanted to have all the verses together. And the song is composed to be verse, chorus, verse, chorus, and so on. Well, I had to take, and of course that was long before digital audio workstations. I worked in 24-track and edited the piece so that all the verses came together and then this incredible chorus at the end. And that's what I think makes the Thriller video so unique. It's a movie. It's an actual movie. It's got a little plot.
Right. And so you actually took the song apart and reconstituted it to fit that movie. It's a soundtrack.
That's right, to fit Michael and John Landis's concept of what that movie should be. And I'll never forget when we previewed it, we went, my wife and I, we went to the preview, and the response was, we did it in a movie theater in Los Angeles. The response was incredible. But the song is totally reconstructed. I took it apart and put it back together again.
Well, now, there will be a commemorative 25th anniversary reissue of Thriller out in February. Mm-hmm. You're not involved in that, right?
Not yet, but you got to remember, I'm kind of known as a budget buster. When I worked on Michael's the reissue albums and so on, my only desire was to make the music sound as good as it possibly could and to make it a real artistic event. So I probably messed up the budget a little.
All right. Bruce Swedien engineered Michael Jackson's Thriller. Jim Farber, a final question for you. Jim's the pop music critic for the Daily News. We're going to go out with this song, Wanna Be Starting Something. It has a kind of a darker, almost hostile quality to it. Do you see, with the benefit of hindsight, that darkness that would come out in all the lurid news stories later, do you see any of that in Thriller?
I think the only connection there would be, and it is a significant one. I mean, Thriller is just, you know, was designed to be a big record that couldn't possibly have known just how big it would be. But after that, I think, you know, it seemed to be that Michael Jackson was sort of chasing the audience, you know, at that point. And it did seem to me, from a critical point of view, and certain other critics at the time, that there was a certain kind of greed for attention at that point that was robbing him of some of the inner direction that he's wanted from an audience.
You know what that lyric is?
We're going to have to actually, Bruce, we're going to have to leave it there. Let me thank the two of you, Bruce Swedien, Jim Farber, for being with us. It was 25 years ago this week that Thriller came out, and the Thriller video and the Filipino inmate remake of the video are on the soundcheck page of our website, wnyc.org. Bruce Swedien, the engineer of Thriller, Jim Farber from the New York Daily News. Guys, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And up next, it's our soundcheck CD picks of the week. This is Soundcheck. It's time for our Soundcheck Picks of the Week. Here are some of the items in heavy rotation in the Soundcheck office this week, beginning with Glenn Gould and a box set, a 6-CD set called The Young Maverick, drawn from early radio broadcasts by the legendary Canadian pianist. So this is a young Glenn Gould, but already an iconoclast. Listen to the outrageously fast tempos in this performance of Bach's Fifth Partita, for example. For a guy who famously retreated to the recording studio later in his career, he seemed to relish playing live on the radio. Thank you. That's a bit of the Partita No. 5 in G major by Bach in an early recording made live off of the radio, the CBC, by Glenn Gould. Our next CD pick this week is from Doveman. Doveman is Thomas Bartlett. He's been touring with the indie rock band The National and has now released a solo album called With My Left Hand, I Raise the Dead. It's like a musical dream as Doveman stumbles through sad and blurry memories. Thomas Bartlett's voice barely hovers above a whisper as he sings about chasing clouds and sunken queens. This track is called Tender Mercies. Tender Mercies is from the one-man band called Doveman, from the new record With My Left Hand, I Raise the Dead. Our Soundcheck Picks of the Week continues with Three Coens and their collaborative record called Braid. Now, at this point, it seems like there are a ton of young jazz musicians here in New York who are originally from Israel. There are three among them who are from the same Israeli family. Trumpeter Avishai Cohen, clarinetist and sax player Anat Cohen, and saxophonist Yuval Cohen all have independent careers and play music as diverse as bebop or Brazilian choro. But they often jam together, and they have just released a new album called Braid. They composed 9 of the 10 tracks, this one written by Anat. Et Amélie is the name of that track, written by Anat Cohen and played by her brothers, Avishai Cohen and Yuval Cohen, with Anat herself, from an album called Braid by the Three Coens. Our final soundcheck pick of the week is not a CD at all, but rather a DVD from Mahmoud Ahmed and the Ether Orchestra. Ahmed is one of the legends of the golden age of Ethiopian pop back in the 70s when musicians were blending James Brown-style funk, Latin jazz, and the exotic, almost Asian sounds of Ethiopian folk music. Ahmed teams up here with the Ether Orchestra, who've been reviving interest in Ethiopian music in recent years. Here, the two come together to play one of Mahmoud Ahmed's classic tracks from the early 70s.
Sadina beker,
That's the great Ethiopian singer Mahmoud Ahmed and the Cambridge, Massachusetts jazz band, the Ether Orchestra. The DVD is called Ethiosonic, and it's one of our Soundcheck Picks of the Week. You can get full details and see previous Soundcheck Picks of the Week on the Soundcheck page of our website, wnyc.org. This is Soundcheck.